Hello everyone and welcome back to another episode of the Propulsion Swim Podcast. Time for our third talk following the British champs with another swimmer who has made the World Championships team in Japan. And on this week's episode, we are speaking to Bath Performance Centre's Luke Turley.
Yeah, our last two episodes with Ollie Morgan and Emily Large have been brilliant, and I feel like this one will be no different as well. Luke is another swimmer that had a great week at British Championships to secure his place on the plane for Japan, and I think a lot of people agree as well that it was richly deserved.
So let's have a quick listen and hear what's in store on this week's podcast.
400 now is almost a long sprint, so I don't think not many people can hold it for that long, so you need to figure out at what point in the race you can conserve energy but hold speed. I really enjoyed it, and I think again you have to enjoy the races when you go. I enjoyed the race, so I was in the middle of Matt and Duncan, and Matt flew off in an amazing time, 1:44, and I was next to him, so it's great to be in that race, and it does help drag you along. You come with, you get up for the big event, so it's really nice to be in it. And you know, it's with the experience, the more you're in that environment, the more you race the race, then the times and the progression does come with it.
So before we jump into this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast, I just want to make a quick announcement to all of our podcast listeners. There is something very special that is now live from Propulsion Swimming, and that is our merchandise store is now available for everyone who wants to buy anything that says Propulsion Swimming on it. Simple as that. But in all honesty, this merchandise store isn't there for us to make a profit. What it is there to do is to help fund us to get to more meets and get more coverage, because me and Dan on this 3-year journey, we haven't paid ourselves a penny. All income from Propulsion Swimming has been put back into the coverage that we do for British Swimming. And hopefully this merchandise store will enable people to show their support for the journey that we are on, but also get us to more meets and get us covering what is an incredible time in British Swimming. So the link for that store is in the description of this podcast. And yeah, let's jump straight into this week's episode. So please welcome onto the podcast the new British champion in the men's 400 meters freestyle, Luke Turley. Luke, thanks for joining us on the podcast this week. How are things with you? Have you been keeping busy?
Yeah, I've been. I'm always busy. I'm someone who always ends up. I always feel like I have to do stuff. So yeah, I'm always busy, but everything's going well at the moment.
You say have to do stuff. We were speaking before this podcast kind of all started recording. And I think a good place actually to flow this straight into the conversation is to start. So how do you fund yourself to be a professional swimmer? Because you say you're keeping busy because you've got jobs on the side of swimming.
Yes. I'm not on program, so I'm not a funded athlete. I'm part of a centre, so I train out of the Bath Performance Centre. So that effectively counts as what would be my funding. But in order for me to swim day to day and to pay the bills and rent and stuff like that, I coach out of the University of Bath. So I'm one of the coaches for the University of Bath. I also run sort of like, I think it's called, it's like a medical chambers. So I'm basically a secretary for a private doctor. So I do like emails, their invoices, stuff like that, on the side, normally in the evenings. And then also on the weekends, occasionally, if I need a little bit of a top up, I work for a company called Athletes in Schools. So where they'll send an athlete in, you'll do a presentation to like kids or events on weekends, stuff like that. Just talking about swimming, my journey, sort of inspiring kids to get into sport nice and early.
Wow. Does this like sap any energy out of your training, or is this literally you just enjoy it?
I do enjoy it. It is nice, and I do like to keep busy. I'm not someone that can just like sit down and do nothing. So I did 3 years of university prior to, I say, going like athlete full time. I suppose I still have jobs on the side, but before the main focus was swimming. I did a sports science degree out of the University of Bath. So I've always had something to do alongside my swimming. I think it provides a nice balance, and it almost make sure that you're not fully consumed by swimming itself. So it's a nice thing to have a switch off where you can either, I know some people who I swim with go and play golf.
A lot of them play golf.
Yeah, a lot of people like golf. When the weather's nice, it makes sense to do. But some people play golf. Some people in the group are learning guitar. It's just, I think you do need something on the side along with swimming so you can switch off from it. I think someone, an old coach gave me, this was Joel Fink, who used to train me before the Olympics. He said it's normally 2 works really well. 3 can start to have a drain, and anything more than 3 and you'll start to see drops in performance across all 3. So say for instance you had a job, university and swimming, you'll probably find, as they're all quite big tasks and they're all very time consuming, they can drag away from each other. Whereas swimming for me is my main focus. I put everything into that, and I do the jobs around it to enable me to swim. So the people I work for are really, really understanding of all that. So Wollaston House is the doctor company that I work for. They're really understanding of like my journey. If I tell them I'm going away for a week, I'll be abroad and I won't be able to access the system because I do it all remotely, they're really understanding of all that, and they'll give me the leeway as long as I give them loads of notice. Similarly, with Champs coming up, I told them that I wasn't going to do any work over that week and just focus on swimming. And then I picked up, well, I'm still working off most of the backlog that I had during that week. But yeah, I had a few emails to come back to, but slowly getting through it, which they're really understanding of. And as long as I do get the work done, they, you know, it's all good for that.
Yeah, I think it must have been like a year ago to this point we had Dan Jervis on, and he's a decorator for his dad in between time at the pool, and he did it kind of for his mental health and having a break away from swimming so he could switch off as well. So that must be really great for you, and it's also good that you've got your foot in the door for life after swimming as well. I know it's like a long way away, but your CV is going to look a lot better than some professional swimmers when they leave the sport.
Yeah, and I suppose that is something that does dawn on your mind, especially if you're not on program and you can't pay bills immediately. It is almost more forefront. So to build, again, building skills. So I did, I got my level 1, level 2 swim teaching. I've got level 1 coaching. So that enables me to do other jobs that I can fill around swimming. Yeah, they're still swimming related, but it's still somewhat of a release and time away from the performance aspect that's a bit more relaxed. Before the Olympics, I actually went down to train with Dan for 3 weeks. Okay. And I remember him coming in to the pool covered in paint and plaster up his arms before we ended up getting in the evening session. So I do know that he does that, and I think, yeah, he does enjoy it.
And even with all of this that's going on, you still managed to come away from Champs with, well, some incredibly strong performances and a British title. So are you happy with how the week went in the pool?
Yeah, I think it was a good week. I will admit it was a good week. I know everyone will always say they want slightly faster, they want a little bit more, but that's just the nature of the sport itself. You always have to be striving for that little bit extra. But something I'm sort of coming to terms with as well is being happy with how you've done in the moment. So immediately after the 400 free, I probably wasn't best pleased. I wanted a little bit more of a PB, considering all the work we've done. But after talking to my coach, Jamie Main, we said the way that I swam it was what we wanted. So in order to go the faster times that, you know, order you to, I say, like the selections for the Olympics in next year is 46.7. If you want to go those times, you have to swim it. You have to go out. You have to go out as hard as you can. We sort of planned to go out in about 152.1, 152.0. I think I was at 151.6. So it's a little bit quick. And that half a second up front probably maybe robbed you of the back half. But you have to try that in the moment. You can't be gingerly. You can't like hold back just so you're not, just in order to win the race or to swim it how you normally swim, you have to go out and try something new. And that was a good time to do it because we've done the work, you know, the easy speed was there. It's then the more you do it, the better you become, and then the times do come eventually.
Oh, so that was always the plan, to take it out quite hard, because when we were watching it looked like a really gutsy swim. I don't know if it is because, you know, you've got Kieran kind of next to you who is kind of known for his back end speed. Mm. I thought, my personal opinion is that you took it out hard to try and break him a little bit to stop him from catching up a little bit. That was going through my head.
Mm. I mean, I train with Kieran on the daily and he's brilliant to train with. Yeah. And his back 50, his back 100 is incredibly strong. And I knew that, like, speed wise, that back 50, he would have me, but I have to try and put as much gap and as much distance as possible to be able to do that. Right. So that was the plan. We go out a little bit harder. We have been practicing to do that because previously I've been someone that builds the race a bit more. So the back half has been strong, but it hasn't been strong enough up front. So I'm left with too much work to do down the last 200 metres. So taking it out differently is just something we're trying, and it's working at the moment. So hold on to it, keep doing it, and keep practicing it.
Absolutely. How much emphasis goes into, like, analysis and tactics for a race like the 400? Because at this exact moment that we're recording the podcast, in the world of swimming, there's been some really fast times, but they're just individual swimmers at open meets. It's almost time trials. And then when you get to the world stage, I don't think the times matter in a 400 free. It is a lot more about the tactics when you're racing it. We saw Elijah Winnington do where he slowed down for that middle 100 and then kicked on again. How much goes into tactics for a race like a 400?
I think 400 now is almost a long sprint, so I don't think not many people can hold it for that long. So you need to figure out at what point in the race you can conserve energy but hold speed. Some people are very good off the start and their out and out easy speed is brilliant, so they can use that. Some people, maybe such as myself, are generally slightly better at building and coming back a little bit faster. So it does depend on what suits you and your physiology. We've done sessions before where if I was to go a flat out 100, it would be like a certain time. And if I was to do another one on minimal rest, it'd normally end up being slightly faster, despite it feeling, even feeling easier, despite being the first one being as hard as possible. It just depends on how your physiology works, that you can carry speed or you can move forward, and how you plan your race. For example, someone like Kieran is very, very good down the back half, and his back 50, back 100. So he'll use that to his advantage and fly past people when they're getting tired, like he almost did with me on the 400.
It was close.
Yeah. Like, he will use that, and that works brilliantly for him. I don't have as much raw speed on the back 50. So if I was to try the same race plan as him, it wouldn't be met with the same outcome. If we take Elijah Williamson, for example, his 200 free is incredibly quick. So he's around about 146, 145 swimmer. So he can use a bit more speed up front. So he normally goes out, I think at Commonwealth Games, he went out in 149. That's only a second off of my PB. So if I was to do that, I would really fall off. Whereas he can carry the speed a bit more and hold it through. So it depends on individual, and you have to play around with it to see what works and how you are in training before choosing certain tactics.
So of course, when you're at Bath, and everyone I assume will have their own individual plan, you've identified that you need to go out a little harder, but then maybe Kieran needs that as well, seeing as though he knows he's going to come back strong. Maybe he needs to go out hard as well. Are you on the same sort of plan ish give or take?
Yeah, so really lucky that we're part of the performance centres, that we have a sports analyst she's employed across British swimming broadly, but she's mostly based out of Bath, Victoria. She will create a race model for you with splits, stroke rates, times, that's based off of your, I think, four or five last best swims. So it will follow the race model that you normally swim at. So if someone was to go out really fast, then that would have a very front heavy 200. If you're someone that comes back very quick, then the splits will also show that very back heavy split. And it does depend on, again, like certain physiologies, stuff like that, lactate profile. Some people can sit at a base level for a long period of time and not produce much. but then a slight increase in effort will cause a big spike. And if you spike that too early, then it will negatively impact the race as you'll have to deal with a lot more pain.
So going into a meet or going out of a meet like that, there is a lot of reviewing that happens between you, the coach, and the sports scientist. Like a lot behind the scenes that probably we guys never hear about.
Yeah, I think every coach will have, and every program will have their specific level of how they analyse things. And everyone will always have like a debrief with their coach on how the meet went, what they thought went well, what maybe didn't, what you can improve on. And then you set goals on what to take forward into the next training block to bring into the next major meet. Again, thanks to Victoria, she maps out like times in the turns, times to 15. So take example, my 200 free heat, I missed two of the turns, which you could see when she went through the analysis, the turns were 0.3 slower than the first one, just purely on not having the correct approach. So little bits like that, you can make up time in the middle just by perfecting skills, maybe up in stroke rates. We've looked at the stroke rates of so the top five in the world and how they're holding, what they sort of look at. So say they'll hold middle of the race around about a 38, but the first 50 is say a 40, so a 41, they drop back to the 38, and then they'll build back up to a 45 towards the finish.
So how soon after, let's say, champs, did you then review your race with coaches, with sports scientists, your support staff?
I've not fully reviewed my race just yet because I'm having it on Wednesday. I've only been back in the pool a week. There's a lot of people to get through. So my review itself is on Wednesday, but we did a slight review after the 200 free heat. As we said, like, okay, where can we make up a bit more speed? Because up with the quality of the field, most people have to go very hard in to make the final. So we looked at it quickly, as Victoria did the analysis very quickly as well. And we saw the turn was about 0.3 behind on those two turns that I missed. So by knowing those, we then went into the final and tried to nail the turns, which nailed the turns. It did end up slightly slower, stuck in between Matt and Duncan. Maybe a bit more experience within 200 free. I might be able to hold it a little bit better, but yeah, after nailing the turns, those are things you work on to take forward, and 9 out of 10 times, they will then translate into an improved time.
If we transfer those processes that you go through as an elite athlete with all of the coaches, and then if we transfer them to kind of the amateur age group level, is there any advice that you'd give for other younger swimmers when they're watching their races back? What should they be looking at?
So obviously after doing with the coaching I do with my group at the university, they are, some of them are like national level and then some are like just breaking international level. That's the, they're a really good bunch of uni students. So they're normally, most of them are majority first years. They're really good, really enthusiastic, and they really like the analysis part and looking and breaking down their races. But you don't want to overemphasize things to give them too much to talk about. And I was doing a little bit of research on it past week or so in my week off. Someone said that if you're doing sprint training with stuff like 50s or 25, stuff like that, don't overemphasize the time, because you don't want the athlete to overthink about what they're doing. So just let them feel the sprint, feel the race, feel the stroke, and then that will translate into a good time. Don't overload people. But when you are reviewing a race, you do need to pick out probably a good thing just to boost your mood. What did you do well? Is it something that you've been trying to work on previously? Does that then translate into something that went well in that race? Is there something you can then improve on that didn't go well that will give you a faster time eventually? So I think keep it simple. So moving into this season, I picked up on three things that I wanted to sort of improve on, like a technical aspect in my stroke, a turn emphasis, and then probably a psychological one as well. So maybe round about those 3 points, one for each. So it's not overloading yourself on stroke emphasis or any other aspect, things you can think of that are spread across the three topics.
doesn't need to go in as depth as like 0 to 15 meters. You have to do this in 9 seconds. Like, so many it doesn't seconds. Need to go to that sort of depth.
It can do, and I'm sure Ben Proud does. He'll be thinking, okay, how do I get like 10 or 5/100ths of a second faster?
But that's really elitist, not your sort of age group swimmers as such, you know?
So, yeah. I think as age group, it's pick one thing, work on that, and then that will translate into faster times. So if we're going and taking the dive 15, for example, if instead of focusing on trying to make it 0.5 faster, think about having how many kicks you do and have a consistent number of kicks every time you dive in. And then that will then translate into that 0.5, but it's not putting a time emphasis on it, which you don't want them to get hung up on, especially at an early age, because you need to enjoy it. And the only way you're going to stay in the sport and move through is if you enjoy it.
I like it.
Process driven. I don't know how many times we've said it on this podcast. Like, it kind of almost ignore the time, but you just think about the process, like you were saying, the dolphin kicks, think about the streamline, dive entry if you're talking about first to 15. Yeah, all of those sort of things is obviously the main thing from an age group point of view. I completely agree.
Yeah.
Now, if we kind of segue slightly onto keeping people in the sport, British swimming kind of across the board seems to be lacking a little bit of depth in, well, the 4-3, the event that you and Kieran go head to head in. There's not like the stacked final like there is for the 200. Now, do you think there's like the emphasis on the 4x2 relay is huge in British swimming, given the fact that it's a gold medal chance on the international stage pretty much every time it races? Do you think it's taking some swimmers away from other events like the 4-3? Because it would be great to see maybe Tom Dean swim a 4-3 or Duncan.
I know you picked up on this in previous podcasts as well. Yeah. I think there are some events that are, we say, more glamorous. Stuff like hundreds and the 200 free, they're really big events. And at the moment, we are very, very strong in those events. So they will probably draw more people into them. Just even if you forget the relays and the emphasis on the relays and the gold medal, just the event and how many people do it, it might draw it in. So if you take James Guy, for example, when he was doing the 400 free, there was a year, I think, where you had to go sub 50 in the heat to make the final. And that if you have top athletes in those events, it does drag the rest of the field up with you, which would be something I would like to do if, you know, improving the 4-3, go to Worlds, and my aim would be to try and get as close, if not make that 4-3 final as possible, as it is a slightly wider open event. There are a few people that are miles ahead, but I think 46 low to 45 high will make finals. And if one or two people in the nation start excelling, you do want to see in like younger generations, it does start bringing younger people in, as they do want to do those events. So I think there are always transitions in between each, and some events are higher stacked than others, like breaststroke, probably due to Adam Peaty. There's a lot of breaststrokers at the moment. Yeah. So it's probably, it might be more that than the relays, but I'm not sure. But I would also say that I did take up the 200 free as a possibility for a heat swim in the relay. So I suppose, even myself, I look at it in that way.
Yeah. I mean, we've spoken a lot about the distance swimmers at the moment. You've got your Dan Whiffens and you've got your Pop Schneries, your Bobby Finks, Dan Jervis and all that sort of lot. And before we put our hands up saying, oh, we're not very interested in the distance swimming because it's not very exciting. But now, all of a sudden, it's suddenly completely exploded. And in a world where social media is all short form, you just kind of wonder if those events actually take off later on down the line. But it seems to be they're the events to watch at the moment. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I've done the 15. I did the 15 at the Commonwealth Games. It's a hard event, and it is getting really good. And the world at the moment, there's like the top five guys are brilliant. Like, they're all on that world record mark. There's a possibility it could go either this year or next year, which would be brilliant to see. And I suppose if you have a good group of people in that event, then you're always fighting that little bit more to get ahead. Whereas if it's just you on your own, it might be that there's nothing giving you that little bit extra drive just to keep pushing it forward. So you do need, say, a thick field to help get the best performances out of you.
Yeah, sure. 800 was actually, I thought, really, really good. It kind of went under the radar just because Dan obviously swam really, really well that whole week. But how do you foresee yourself closing that gap on him?
I mean, Dan's brilliant. I get on really well with Dan. We've trained together before. We did a training camp in Loughborough in February. I think we both liked it, no matter how hard the week itself was. But I mean, that I try and chase Dan. And I suppose probably in the same sense, Dan is trying to get away from me. Mm-hmm. So in that sense, we're both pushing and dragging each other along. So if I drop 2 seconds, he drops 2 seconds. And it's, you end up going with each other. So, I mean, I'd love to close the gap on Dan. As much as I like him, I would still want to beat him, as most people are in the sport. And again, like that's an event I like. I think, again, going back to like a physiology perspective, that's probably one I'm maybe more suited to. But we will see. It's still a relatively new event for me. So taking it on in the next couple of years into the Olympics would be a nice thing to do.
How do you balance your training between the 2, the 4, and the 8? Because they are very different events to target.
Yes. So mainly we look at laying like a nice big aerobic base. So high meters for a solid 5 to 7 weeks. And then you do like your VO2 and a little bit of speed work that helps the 4. And then I think for me, the easy speed needed for the 2 comes with rest. So if I was to just flat out a 50, it'd probably be slower than if I did 250s as like build, so to speak. Or if I built 250s and then went, it'd probably be faster than the one I just did flat out off the blocks. That's just how my body works. So again, nice big aerobic base, high meters that helps the 8. You find your rhythm, you find your feel for the water, and then moving forward into a bit more, we say, anaerobic work. So like a bit more VO2, you do a little bit of like race pace and production type things, production type sessions. And then the easy speed for me comes with rest. So as we taper in, we noticed that for me to actually hit pace, I was going a lot faster than I should because I was expecting it to feel hard, but it was just coming nice and easy. And you learn that flow of how your stroke goes and what sort of rate you should be hitting as you rest and your body starts to recover from the big block of work you've done previous.
Yeah, I find the 400 is such an oddball event, actually, because the 800 is then classed as distance, the 200 is classed as sprints. You're now saying the 400 is now like a long sprint. Surely the training is kind of all over the place. You must have weeks where you do anaerobic and then weeks where you do aerobic just to get a mix of everything, I guess.
Yeah, and I think the general periodization that we follow is 4 to 5 weeks of like aerobic work. You'll then have, in an ideal world, a recovery week, and then go into 3 to 4 weeks of like quality anaerobic type block, another recovery week, and then like an aerobic top up where you still dip into those anaerobic processes before you then dip into your taper. So you do almost, you sandwich it with a bit of aerobic either side to keep yourself topped up. Because the big aerobic base does then feed into and help your anaerobic system and you recover from doing those big sets that reap a high reward, but can leave you in the bin.
So bring back some memories, Dan.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Are you kind of stuck between two minds? Because you know you just said you wanted to be on the 4x2 heat swim, let's say, for example, but then you also say the 800 maybe is your number one goal eventually down the line. Are you kind of stuck between the two right now?
I think I've had a brief chat with my coach Jamie about it. It's, we'll keep the 8 as it's, you know, like the qualification times I know I can get, like they're within reach. So we'll keep the eight from that perspective, but then also the two comes as like an accessory event. So the two will help the four will help the eight. So if you can get a bit more speed up front for a 200, then the going out speed for your 400 comes down, which then reads a faster time. And if you can hold faster in the four, effectively you can hold a little bit more out speed in the eight. They do somewhat interlink as they are still very aerobic events. But I think the 200 is just due to the relay possibilities. It's a nice accessory event to have on the side and still keep, you know, as it is. Also, I enjoy it. Like, I enjoy doing the two. It's my fun event of the week because it's the shortest. So it's nice to go and have a bit more, I'd say like a speed hit out towards the end of the week. I'm there anyway. And if I'm doing well at it, then you might as well keep doing it. And if you enjoy it, it's nice to just keep in your arsenal events, so to speak.
Absolutely. What was that 2-3 like at Champs as a kind of experience to be a part of? Because just on the pool deck, like running around with a camera, we kind of felt it was a different beast. It was all BBC were there. Everyone was watching it. What was it like on the cool room? Was it a bit more tense than the week previous to it?
I didn't know BBC were there at all. I tend to just,
fair enough.
Tend to maybe keep to myself a little bit before races. Yeah. I was probably more so relaxed because I know I'd done well in the four. I know I'd done well in the eight. And the 2-3, again, is my fun event. I probably wasn't as tense as maybe some people would be if it was their main event. I thought the cool room was nice and relaxed. We were all having a laugh. People were joking about stuff beforehand. We were reminiscing about the camp we had to Turkey last year. So after trials, Bath Performance Centre went to Turkey for a week to train at Gloria. We were saying, oh, we'll never have a camp like that again because it was effectively on the beach in the sun and we played volleyball after the session. we probably won't get that again in our swimming career. So we were chatting about that. And if you are relaxed, I think you then just go in and race how you should instead of overthinking what you should be doing. If you just relax, chill a bit, then you race exactly how you've trained, which then reads the best result.
Yeah, I mean, you must feel proud with the way that you swam, you know, across the three events, but especially that 200 with the crowd you were in, in terms of like the Olympics gold and silver medalists and times being blown out of the water. Like, how would you sort of sum up that sort of experience?
I really enjoyed it. And I think, again, you have to enjoy the races when you go. I enjoyed the race. It was a little bit slower than my heat, but it's the first year that I picked up the two again. So I haven't done the two probably since I was 17, as I went a bit more of the 15 route. So picking up the two again, it's my first year doing it. I probably got to get a bit more experience in bigger finals and next to some really big people. So I was in the middle of Matt and Duncan, and Matt flew off in an amazing time, 1:44. And I was next to him. So it's great to be in that race, and it does help drag you along. You come with, you get up for the big event. So it's really nice to be in it. And, you know, it's with the experience, and the more you're in that environment, the more you race the race, then the times and the progression does come with it.
Has there been any inkling that you've made the 4x2 relay heats yet, or is that a long way down the road?
I'm not sure. I mean, I've not had much more apart from the selection email that I got late. Just partly because my email's shocking.
So you found it out on website as everyone else?
Yeah, so most people got their email about 9 in the morning and knew they were on the team. I got a message off of Cam Brooker when the list had been produced and I hadn't had my email yet. So, some people found out before I did. But it's nice. Like, it's a great thing to have, like, you know, from your teammate and you're both over the moon that you're going. But I've not had anything more on what I'm doing. I'm assuming I'll do the eight with Dan as I got the FINA A time to do it with him. Like, second place, you get two spots. I'll possibly do the four, and there's no one else will do that, and they'll be probably the two main events I'll do. There's a possibility of the 4x2 heat, but that will then depend on how well I do at Seti Colli and the Mare Nostrums, if British Swimming have like the confidence to put me in and make sure, even with like a 1:48, that we still will make the final. Because the last thing I'd want is to go in, go 1:48 flat, and then we come ninth. So you've got to weigh up the risks. And I know if I want a solid spot in the 4x2, you've got to be going 47 low to 46 high as a minimum.
Yeah. I mean, what is your aim for Worlds this summer?
Obviously to improve, everyone wants PBs. Improve and move forward and like bring it on from what we did in Sheffield. Get down. I've been chasing a 1:46 in my head for a while, and I don't like to jinx it, so I'm not one to always talk about it. But again, just bring the times down into those closer to the times that British Swimming set as the qualifying standards, as I believe they'll be similar-ish next year. So get as close to those as possible, bring it down so that they're either there or within reach come Olympic Trials next year. But it's also, again, just it's the biggest meet I've done so far. So go in, enjoy it, gain the experience. And as Jamie said before the Commonwealth Games, go and be a hitter, not a tripper. So go in, hit the event, do really well, come away with the experience, come away with some good races, instead of just going for the trip and a nice holiday to Japan. Like, that's not what we're there for. Yeah. You want to go, you want to race well, you want to PB, post fast times, and gain experience that you can, and things take away from your race that you can take into the next season.
How valuable was that experience at Commonwealth Games, coming away with your first international medal, not just leading towards champs, to Worlds, but also the whole Olympic cycle as a whole?
It definitely gives you a lot of confidence, knowing that you can compete with some of the best in the world. Again, I was next to Elijah Winnington when he went the 42 at Commonwealth Games. And you can learn a lot from being in that environment and how some of the best in the world swim. And it does, you almost want it to feel like another event, because, yeah, the pressure is great. And people say, you know, diamonds don't form without pressure, but you don't want it to be crippling. So having the experience going in previously and knowing it's just another meet and you've done it before, you've been with the same people. So say, you know, I would have seen half the Australians and some of the South Africans around before, so it's nothing too new. It's just an invaluable experience taken forward to then bring into your races domestically or internationally.
Definitely, I agree.
100%. Well, Luke, it's been great chatting to you on this week's podcast. I know you listen, so you know these quick fire questions are coming.
Yes.
Have you prepared at all for them?
Oh, I know about the car one.
Okay.
How many would you take on your road trip?
Yeah, okay. We'll get to that.
But I'm
we'll
not sure of some of the others.
That's the only one you need to plan, really. Yeah.
What is your favourite event?
My favourite event? It's probably the 800 at the moment, yeah.
Nice. Who is your swimming idol?
Swimming idol, it would be Ian Thorpe, partly because of the same events. And even like his lifestyle and how he lived and his media presence and just being viewed in such a positive light is also a whole well-rounded part of swimming.
Absolutely. What's your proudest moment in swimming so far?
So far probably would be my medal at the Commonwealth Games.
What's the hardest set you've ever done in training?
Hardest set I've ever done? I can't remember recently, but one that's always stuck with me. So when I was about 15, training back at Hatfield, I did like a week's or 3 days training camp in Loughborough with Tim Shuttleworth and the distance group coached by Kev Renshaw before going into the Olympics. And he had 10 400s best average off, I think, 440 or 430. And at 15, that was miles out of probably what I could have done at that point in time. I think I managed, 7 before I missed the turnaround. And then the last three were just trash, just sheer surviving the rest of the session. That's probably, yeah, the hardest one I can remember, probably for the wrong reasons than anything like you get out of it.
Lovely. So like best average with like no rest whatsoever, really. That's disgusting.
Yeah, no rest for me. The other guys were fine. Yeah. They were holding like low fours, and I think Tim went 3:59 on the last one. So they were getting rest, but me at 15, I was almost touch and go for the majority of them, having not broken 4 minutes myself in a race.
Yeah, well,
baptism of fire.
Oh yeah, that was a tough day.
Final question then, you know it's coming. If you were to go on a road trip, there's three spaces in the car. You can take friends, family, celebrities, anyone you want. It helps everyone get to know you that little bit more away from swimming. Who would you take with you?
It would be my mum, my brother, and my girlfriend in the car.
Nice family car.
Nice family car.
Like it. Luke, thank you so much for joining us on this week's podcast. Best of luck this summer. And yeah, good luck with the jobs as well. Keep them going strong, and hopefully we'll see you on a poolside very soon.
Yeah, see you soon. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, congratulations on amazing champs. And honestly, if you keep going the way you're going, then we're looking pretty good for the summer. So yeah, good luck to you.
Thank you. That's all the target. Keep moving forward.
Dan, great to speak to another British champion. Luke certainly had a fantastic week at British Champs and comes across really insightful in just his knowledge of swimming as a whole. I really enjoyed that podcast.
Well, he does. Well, a lot of our talk was about reviewing his swim and reviewing in general. And I feel like that was quite a key takeaway for youngsters. We talked about age group swimmers and they shouldn't be focused on times. They should be focused on processing, which is everything that we've tried to get across in this podcast. And it's very interesting that he hasn't actually reviewed his race fully until, what was it? We hasn't done it yet. But since we've started recording, it was like in 2 days' time, roughly, something like that. So it's interesting. I thought when I asked the question, I thought it was going to be like rock up instantly. But it wasn't to be, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, it's interesting to have that kind of cool down period, that switch off. Do you know why I think he was so insightful and being able to share all of this knowledge about how to review, especially for youngsters? Because he's a coach as well as a swimmer. Now, not many people probably knew that heading into someone who's won a Commonwealth medal is having to fund his swimming journey with two part-time, potentially three part-time jobs as well. It's eye-opening. Like, swimming isn't a glamorous sport when it comes to having to pay the bills.
No, you do have to be at the top of the sport to sort of to sustain your full-time athlete sort of position, don't you? Interesting that you brought up Dan Jervis as well, because he got that same sort of way of, yes, he has a part-time job, but actually, yes, the money is obviously helpful, but he actually does it as a bit of a break from swimming to get his mind off it. I think that's kind of crucial, and a lot of swimmers, athletes in general actually, have said that they need to get their mind off the main focus of winning Olympic gold, let's say, and just change their mindset a little bit, just switch off, because, well, as we all know, mental health is super important, and so it's a way to switch off and a good way to protect themselves as well, of course.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So that just about rounds up this week's episode of the Propulsion Swimming Podcast. If you haven't subscribed already, please do so on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. And if you haven't checked out the new Propulsion Swimming store, please do so. The link is in the podcast show notes. There is an exclusive offer in there as well for podcast listeners, if you are listening on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. And me and Dan will be back in 7 days' time.
Yeah, thank you for listening, everyone, and we'll catch you on the next one.
You've been listening to the Propulsion Swimming Podcast with Scott and Dan. We want to thank you for joining us and invite you to subscribe to the show, as well as checking out the Propulsion Swimming YouTube channel for weekly tutorials and videos to get your swimming fix. We will be back next week. Until then, we'll catch you on the next one.